KALW.
My whole dream growing up was like be a D1 athlete, you know, like D1 bound, and kind of having that taken away in the sport I wanted to do it in. When the opportunity presented itself in rowing, I was like, let's see what happens.
After overcoming tragedy, Charles Nordin found success in a sport entirely new to him.
I never really saw myself as disabled, so to speak. So it, again, never crossed my mind that I could potentially classify for the Paralympics.
Today, we talk to the Paralympic rower from Oakland who used a moment of visibility to raise his voice for racial justice.
So much of it was because of Oakland. Just the history of activism instilled in me like a sense of responsibility to like speak up and against social injustices.
Making waves and taking a stand. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games in Paris are just a couple of months away. And while top-tier competition is always the focal point of the Games, they've also historically served as a stage for political protest. Today, reporter Raphael Cohen introduces us to an Oakland-raised athlete whose life took a turn after a devastating injury.
Ask any sports fan from Oakland which homegrown athletes best exemplify the town's rebel spirit, and you're almost sure to hear the names of several revered legends from the hardwood, diamond, or gridiron. Bill Russell, the late hoops great and civil rights hero. Ricky Henderson, the A's man of steel, a baseball titan with a trickster's flair. Or Marshawn Lynch, aka Beast Mode, the recently retired running back, as known for being
about that action
on the football field, as for his style, swagger, and efforts to elevate his hometown. What you certainly won't hear referenced is the unrenowned sport of rowing. But one indomitable young man from Oakland, who happened on the oars by accident, is steadily making a name for himself, both on and off the water.
My name is Charlie Nordin. I'm a Bay Area native, born in San Francisco, raised in Oakland and Alameda.
I met with Charlie on the banks of Lake Merritt to talk about his athletic career and the unlikely journey that led him to the Paralympic Games in Tokyo 3 summers ago.
I always loved running. I love it. It's like the most pure form of competition, in my opinion. Like, you don't need anything. Literally just go out, run, and whoever's faster is who's gonna win. So I was always drawn to it. I like had dreams of, you know, running in college, potentially D1.
Then, on the last day of his junior year at Bishop O'Dowd High School, the unthinkable.
We were out at a lake and I was on a rope swing. And before I made it out over the cliff, like over the water, the rope snapped. And I fell, and instead of falling into the water, I fell on the shore. I had burst fractures in my L3, L4, and L5 vertebrae. And as they burst out, it partially severed my spinal cord. So I had pretty severe nerve damage to my right leg. I can't really feel much of it at all.
He'd fallen 40 feet and would remain fully paralyzed for nearly 4 months.
The injury was so severe that like my whole sport just became like recovery. You know, like I was in PT 3 to 4 times a week over at Children's Hospital in Oakland. Life-changing, life-saving work that they did with me that whole year.
Able to walk again after an arduous rehabilitation and now graduated from high school, Charlie departed for Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. His fledgling athletic career was behind him, or so he thought.
My second or third day of freshman year, the assistant coach, his name's Mark Voorhees, he saw me from across the room, like this big freshman orientation group of people, and he's 6'10", I'm 6'8". So he like pointed to me over this literal sea of freshmen.
Ever thought about rowing, Coach Voorhees asked. Charlie's response?
Honestly, not. Like, I don't, it seems kind of weird, but he's like, oh, you'd be good at it, you should try. And I wasn't convinced, but I don't know why I did go to like the first practice.
There, his hopes for a competitive sporting life were kindled anew.
My whole dream growing up was like be a D1 athlete, you know, like D1 bound, and kind of having that taken away in the sport I wanted to do it in. When the opportunity presented itself in rowing, I was like, let's see what happens. And I was drawn to it, just how like hard it is, the aerobic tax and like that burn in your lungs and stuff that I really love. But I tell you what, I was so bad.
It didn't happen overnight, but by the end of year one, Charlie's love for the sport had bloomed, and he began to see improvement in his form and speed. The working together thing, that took a little longer.
Honestly, it was a big struggle. It was took a lot to kind of shift that. Because with rowing, it really is like all about unison. And that was something that as a runner, it was just like, you know, if I want to go faster, I'm going to just move my legs. But, you know, it was a very like personal thing. And that just couldn't be further from the truth for rowing. It was one of the reasons I was so bad is because I didn't have that understanding and that teamwork.
Coming back for his second year after a summer of tough training, now ready to make a significant contribution to the crew, fate had something else in store.
I want to say it was the second or third week into sophomore year. I had rods put into my back, took a stroke, and just felt like something really odd, like kind of a snap. Went to a doctor, got x-rays. I saw that I actually snapped one of the rods in my back. Recovery from that surgery and just all the trauma to it put me out all of sophomore year.
Undeterred, Charlie returned to the water following another rehabilitation. He grew increasingly engrossed in the sport.
I was watching a bunch of races. Like, I was really studying it, you know, trying to really like master the craft.
On YouTube one day, he stumbled upon a race whose name gave him pause.
PR3 mixed 4. And I was like, huh, like I feel like I know every boat.
But this was something new. PR? Para rowing?
I had no idea about Paralympics at all. So I clicked on it and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And one thing with my injury and disabilities, I've always taken the approach of like, I don't want to let this limit me. I'm still going to just live life and push through kind of any struggle that this might be. So I never really saw myself as disabled, so to speak. So it, again, never crossed my mind that I could potentially classify for the Paralympics.
The Paralympics, of course, are the top-level international sporting competitions for athletes with physical disabilities, organized in similar fashion as the Olympics. Since 1988, they've been held almost immediately after in the same host city.
Then I started doing more research of what all these classification categories are, and for PR3, one of them was significant muscle atrophy due to, like, traumatic injury. And literally, I was like a light bulb. I was like, that's me. It's like, I have that.
Charlie quickly got in contact with U.S. Rowing, who sent him to Seattle for a national talent identification camp. That went real well. And soon enough, he was working his way up the ranks, from the U.S. developmental team and his first international race in Italy, to qualifying for the senior team and racing at the World Championships in 2018. Charlie was now immersed in the para-rowing community, meeting and forging meaningful relationships with rowers dealing with a wide range of disabilities.
PR1, PR2, PR3 are the three like subclassifications of Paralympic rowing, with PR1 kind of being the quote-unquote most disabled, so you'd see a lot of like paraplegics, double amputees, stuff like that. PR2 is kind of that middle ground. Sometimes you'll see like single leg amputees, above the knee amputees, much more significant nerve damage potentially. And then PR3 is like a lot bigger of an umbrella.
Having gotten a taste of competing on the international stage in 2018, Charlie committed himself even more to the sport, convinced that a spot on the national team for the upcoming Paralympic Games was within his reach. At the selection camp in Boston, he endured what he calls
the most stressful 2 weeks of my life.
Between uncertainty about when he'd be called to race, creeping doubts about his individual speed, and the nightly insomnia that ensued, the camp proved to be a powder keg of anxiety. But when he found out he made the squad,
first thing I did was like call my family, and like we were all crying. You know, like it's just such like a surreal moment.
Delayed a year due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the games of the 16th Summer Paralympics took place in Tokyo in 2021. Charlie spent months training rigorously with his teammates in the mixed Cox Fours. That's a crew comprised of 4 rowers, 2 women, 2 men, each using 1 oar, right or left side, plus their coxswain. That's the person responsible for steering the boat. Following a final tune-up camp in Hawaii,
we bounced over to Japan. It was really the most incredible experience of my life. So rarely can you look around and be like, I am living my dream.
right now, especially at the Paralympics, like almost felt utopian-esque. You have people from literally every country in the world with every sort of like ability level coming together in this kind of like harmonious state of like everyone was so friendly, everyone was so happy to be there.
Did that camaraderie compromise the athlete's competitive edge?
I mean, people were focused, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, we were there to do a job and everyone had that energy, but there was just like walking around the dining hall the first day, you know, you'd see every disability you could imagine. But what was incredible was that there was just such a communal understanding, you know, like no one stared at each other and there was no sort of judgment. And especially in a world where that can be kind of hard to find if you have like much more visible disabilities, it was incredibly impactful. And like, I'll never forget that first morning.
Charlie says being part of a community that understood what he'd gone through wasn't something he realized he was missing until he had access to it.
With my disability, like I have a little bit of a limp, and over the years I've gotten pretty good at hiding it just because people mean well when they ask, but like, oh, you know, why are you limping? You're not ready to go on this life story of like, oh, when I was 16, I broke my back, severed my spinal cord. So I've gotten really good at hiding it. But again, walking in that first morning, I was like, I don't have to hide anything. I can just be myself. And that was like one of the most freeling feelings. And I felt like I belonged. You know, I was like, I found my people.
But while deeply moved by the para community of which he was now a part, Charlie's heart and mind remained with his friends and loved ones back in Oakland. He knew his team was in strong contention to medal, and he'd long thought to join the upsurge in athletes speaking out for social change by using his momentary spotlight to raise awareness of an issue dear to him and his hometown, the 2009 police killing of 22-year-old Oscar Grant at the Fruitvale BART station.
One of my earliest memories was Oscar Grant getting killed, and that shaped me so much, and seeing the city like turn out for that and protest for that.
Right to assembly, bro. Right to assembly.
The devil for a paycheck.
Shut the BART
station down.
That was probably one of the most like developmentally impactful things that I had happened to me growing up.
We're following the story of Oakland-raised U.S. Paralympic rower Charlie Nordine, who leveraged his visibility as an athlete to place social justice front and center at the Tokyo Games in 2021. Again, here's reporter Raphael Cohen.
The California Department of Justice had opened an independent investigation weeks before the start of the Paralympics at the behest of the Grant family and the Justice for Oscar Grant Coalition, who'd long advocated for charges to be brought against a second BART cop involved in the events leading to Grant's shooting death. Charlie hoped to heighten this renewed attention on the case and on anti-Black police violence more broadly. I asked him to take me back to 2009, to speak on his connection to the site of Grant's killing, and what kind of awareness he had of racial injustice at that young an age.
I've been around Fruitvale like my whole life, and I don't know, at like 11, especially in Oakland, being in a position of privilege as a white guy, like you're aware of it, but it never really impacted you at that young of an age. So that was the first time my eyes were like really, really open to it, and it definitely shook my worldview and changed it permanently. Even at 11, I had like a deep love for this city and like I really, really just everything about it. So to see it just hurting, you know, and see people that I cared about, communities that I really cared about, you know, in pain from that, still in pain from it. You know, that's a wound that'll never fully heal. I remember that a lot too, just the raw emotion of all of it.
But with a California courtroom ground zero for the next phase of the struggle waged by Oscar Grant's family and supporters, why plan to use the Paralympics in specific as a site of protest?
So much of it was because of Oakland. Just the history of activism. So many of my friends' parents were big in that scene. So hearing their stories from a very young age instilled in me like a sense of responsibility to like speak up and against social injustices. And I wanted to find a way to do it respectfully because it is such an honor to represent Team USA. But I also feel like it's my responsibility to like represent all of the US. For so many people, this idyllic image of the flag waving. Team USA, red, white, and blue, isn't something that they can take pride in and isn't something that they feel a connection to, which I completely understand just through growing up in Oakland, being around so many of my friends and family that are Black and brown. So I felt a deep sense of duty if I got the chance to be on the podium to speak up
for the community back home with the history of Oscar Grant and how much that means to this city. It just felt like it was the right thing to do.
Before he could take a publicly visible stance of the stature he hoped to, Charlie still had to help his team make it to the medal stand. There was still a race to row.
We're underway then in the PR3 Mixed Cox 4 final here at the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Rowing Regatta. Great Britain, top of your picture there with the yellow canvas. They're the big favorites. They go in lane one.
Those are the big dogs. You know, I want to hate them, but like they're so cool. Like they're very nice, very humble. They're so fast. Like all love and respect to those guys because they really are incredibly talented. So we kind of knew because for so long, it's for the most part been us two, you know, kind of duking it out for first and second.
We're seeing athletes with a verifiable and permanent disability who have functional use of their legs, trunk and arms for rowing and who can utilize the sliding seat, also a class that may include up to two rowers with a visual impairment. As we may have expected, it's Britain versus the United States here. The 500 mark and Britain are just ahead.
The 2,000 meter race remained tight for the first half or so. Then Britain began to pull away.
They've got that winning tradition and they've got the right combination again, bringing home another gold medal. Coming over the line in second place are the United States, again behind the Brits. They just can't get back at them.
It's like something that you could kind of stay up at night about, but, you know, I really believe we went out there and, like, put our best foot forward, had one of the best races we could, and in talking to my teammates, they'd say similarly.
The race was over. The victors revealed. But Charlie's opportunity for a principled protest on the Paralympic podium was still a few moments away.
I tell you what, I was nervous as f*** though, before.
It had been more than 50 years since the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, perhaps best remembered for U.S. sprinters Tommy Smith and John Carlos raising their clenched black-gloved fists on the medal stand in a defining gesture of defiance to racial oppression, and paying dearly for it.
The Black Power disciples Tommy Smith and John Carlos, the Olympic 200 meters gold and bronze medalists, had been suspended by the United States Olympic Committee and given 48 hours to leave Mexico.
But Charlie was no stranger to that iconic image, nor to the solidarity that Peter Norman, the white Australian sprinter who finished second in the 200 meters, expressed for his black American counterparts. In fact, Charlie was galvanized by that history. Like Smith and Carlos, he had brought along some unauthorized wares of his own. In his case, a plain black t-shirt with the words "Justice for Oscar Grant" printed in bold white lettering. Now, officially a silver medalist, he'd have a chance to sport that shirt and share that message for all the world to see.
Nike gives you the big podium outfit, right? And you have to take it to the course and they put it in like the kind of changing rooms. And I had slipped in the Justice for Oscar Grant shirt. My teammates knew I was gonna do it because I wanted to make sure that they were okay with it because that's just as much their moment as it is mine. And they're supportive of it. But I was more worried about, you know, like officials and stuff. It was very much so against the rules. The podium ceremony was probably like 15 minutes after the race ended. You know, so I'm like still sweaty, like kind of out of it a little bit. And I put the shirt on, and that's when it became, all of a sudden, it became really real. Because for years, I've been talking about doing it. But then it was like, yo, it's go time. You know, you finna be out there in 5 minutes. Are you going to do it or not?
And did doubt threaten to derail his plan when he finally did make it up to the medal stand? His zipped warm-up jacket still hiding the outcry emblazoned across his chest?
The whole time. I'm not trying to cap. I was like, I kind of always knew I was going to do it. But I was second-guessing myself the whole time. You're in front of all the cameras. You have the medal around your neck. And it would have been so much simpler to just not. I just knew whatever potential repercussions that would have come of protesting on the podium would kind of pale in comparison of, like, the regret and, honestly, guilt that I would feel having not utilized my platform. And then when I was out there, that last moment before I unzipped it, I was really nervous in the moment, but, like, I'm really, really glad that I went through with it.
The International Paralympic Committee, or IPC, immediately launched an investigation into whether Charlie had violated a rule in its handbook, which states that, quote, no kind of demonstration or political, religious, or racial propaganda is permitted at the Games, thus raising the specter of a possible suspension or even expulsion U.S. rowing quickly came out in Charlie's defense. Perhaps even more important to him, though, was waking up the morning after the race to a message of appreciation from the Oscar Grant Foundation and Grant's mother, Wanda Johnson.
That was truly incredible, seeing the impact that it had on them. It's such a deep history of racial injustice, especially with minorities dying at the hands of police. It's unfortunate, but Oscar Grant is, you know, just one name on a long list, and it's very easy to forget about. And I didn't want to let that happen. You know, I wanted to make sure that there would be some level of understanding and appreciation for like who Oscar Grant was. That's when I was telling his mom, I didn't want your baby's name to be forgotten.
In the days that followed, more expressions of gratitude flowed forth, from fellow white athletes grappling with their own questions about how to show up as allies to the black community, to rowers of color who felt seen and validated by Charlie's anti-racist protest in an overwhelmingly white sport. Ultimately, the wellspring of public support for Charlie and the strong backing he received from Bahati Van Pelt, then chief of athlete services at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, helped stem any significant retaliation from the IPC. As for the ripple effect his actions might stir going forward,
I hope that maybe through my case and kind of setting a little bit of a precedent here that like other people would feel empowered to do it. We can't just rely on minorities for social justice because unfortunately so many of the systems in place are in control by white people. And if they don't start feeling pressure by other white people, it's not going to change.
Upon return from Tokyo, Charlie enrolled in a graduate school program that continued to stoke his passion for attacking injustice.
I'd say through this whole experience, I've just gotten even more deeply entrenched in that desire to help.
Pursuing a master's in sociology with a focus on comparative social change, Charlie wrote his dissertation on the positive developmental effects that exposure to the arts in after-school settings has on under-resourced youth in California.
I talked to just some incredible people, some incredible organizations throughout the Bay Area, throughout Los Angeles, and hearing their stories and the impact they're having, I'm just like, that's what I want to do.
And while competitive rowing wasn't yet in the rear view when Charlie and I spoke, in fact, he was still eyeing another crack at the mixed coxed fours with Team USA at this summer's Paralympics and finally capturing the crown from Great Britain.
Gold in Paris wouldn't be bad. I wouldn't complain.
He ultimately made the tough decision to retire from the sport and bring his passion for social change not to the classroom, but to the electoral politics arena. He said he couldn't stay on the sidelines while the US was in such upheaval. So he's living in DC now, working for the House Majority PAC, hoping to steer the country towards victories far more meaningful than medals. Charlie Nordine may have hung up his oars, but this rebel rower's sure to keep making waves for a more just and equitable world. In Oakland, I'm Raphael Cohen for Cross Currents.
That was U.S. Paralympic rower Charlie Nordine speaking with KLW contributor Raphael Cohen. The 2024 Paralympics start in Paris August 28th, with para-rowing events beginning on August 30th. Find out more about how to tune in at klw.org. We're off on Monday, but tune in Tuesday morning at 11. We'll hear from groups that are working to give Pacific Islander communities the support they need.
We try to destigmatize mental illness because we're culturally one of the groups of people that stigmatize mental health.
Finding solutions to isolation and depression, Tuesday morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Steffi Puerto, Cheryl Kaskowitz, James Rollins, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Mary Catherine O'Connor, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trafni. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Babak.